All right, thanks very much, Rob, and thanks very much to Rob, Ilya, and Ellie for inviting me to speak. I'm going to talk today about two things, which both of which may be unfamiliar to you. The first one is something called IMSETs, which are pretty obscure to almost everyone, I would say. So I will explain them first. And the second one are these maximal ancestral graphs, which Stefan did mention to some extent during his talk. And you can think of those as just representing the conditional independence model of a directed acyclic graph where some of the variables are unobserved. Okay, and this is joint work with my student, Zhongyi Hu. So sort of outline is, first I will describe what an IMSET is. So I would suspect that almost no one here has actually heard of them. Then I'll talk about how IMSETs can be applied to directed acyclic graph models, which hopefully most of you are familiar with. And then, so I guess I would say I don't really have time to explain exactly what we've done in great detail. So I would say the most important thing is maybe to understand what an IMSET is and why it's useful for directed acyclic graph models. And then hopefully you might understand why we'd be interested in using them for maximal ancestral graph models, which I will try to motivate. And the reason that we're interested in them is for doing model search. So model search with maximal ancestral graphs is significantly harder than with directed acyclic graphs because there are a lot more models. And there aren't many score-based methods for learning maximal ancestral graphs. And what we're trying to do is to sort of give a computationally feasible way of coming up with a score-based method for learning a maximal ancestral graph just from data. Okay, so start off by talking about IMSETs. They were introduced by Milan Studeni, who Stefan also mentioned a few times, as a way of representing arbitrary conditional independence models. So these are models which are not faithful to a particular graph. So basically, I think Milan thought that graphs were too inadequate to represent all the kinds of models that he was interested in. So he came up with IMSETs. But sort of slightly ironically, it turns out that they are very useful for learning graphical models as well. So the idea is we're going to take a set of variables, which we'll call V, from finite set, and we'll look at the power set. And an IMSET is a vector whose entries are integers and is indexed by the subsets of this set V by this power set P of V. So in other words, you can think of it as sort of being like an integer-valued multi-set. And another way of thinking of it is a function from this power set to the integers. They're often sparse, so they tend to be mostly zero. So one way of representing them is to write them with what we call identity or indicator functions. So this delta A notation means that it's the IMSET whose entry that corresponds to the set A is one and all the other entries are zero. So what does this have to do with conditional independence? Well, we can define what's called a semi-elementary IMSET. For some triple of sets A, B, and C, which may or may not be disjoint, as this sum of these indicator functions. So the idea is what we're trying to represent is the separation of A and B given C. And we do that by starting with the indicator for the set C, subtracting the indicators for the set A union C and the set B union C, and then adding the indicator for the function for the set. That's the union of all three of them. And this, in some sense, represents the conditional independence that XA is independent of XB given XC. Well, how does it do that? Well, I think one way to see it is to note that another way of equivalently writing conditional probabilistic conditional independence is to say that the joint distribution over the three variables, I'm assuming you can see my pointer, right?
Yes.
Good. Can be written as a product of the marginal distribution over A and C times the marginal distribution over B and C divided by the marginal distribution over just C. And we can rearrange that to get this equation. If we then take logarithms, you can see what we get looks rather like the semi-elementary IMSET up here. So we've got something that depends on C, subtracting something that depends on A, C, and something that depends on B and C, and then adding in something that depends on everything. And in fact, it turns out you can test a conditional independence by using something called the interaction information operator, which may be familiar to some of the physicists there. I'm not going to define it, but it's a function of the entropy. And what we find is that this independence will hold, conditional independence will hold, if and only if the inner product between this operator and this semi-elementary inset is precisely zero. And if the conditional independence doesn't hold, this will be strictly positive. So it's a very useful feature for scoring, as we'll see a bit later on. Okay, so that's how we get one conditional independence in an inset. If we want to have several, we need what's called a structural inset. A structural inset is one where you can take some natural number k, multiply it by your inset. So this now will be a positive multiple of the inset you started with. And then you can write that as a sum over all the semi-elementary insets of some integer value times that semi-elementary inset. And in a sense, this is the only kind of inset that can be said to represent a model properly. So being structural is an extremely important property for an inset. And then we can say, okay, well, clearly it must represent all the independences that have a non-zero coefficient in this sum, but there will be several ways of writing this that are equivalent. So actually, to say that an independence is represented in it, we have to have a slightly more, even more convoluted definition, which is that there has to exist a positive integer k, such that when we multiply it by our inset and then subtract the semi-elementary inset for that independence, what we are left with is still structural. And obviously, this, as I say, this sounds rather convoluted, but you can test it relatively straightforwardly with an integer linear program. We have some software that will do that. So what's useful about these insets is that you can score models consistently. So in particular, it's been shown that you can find the optimal directed acyclic graph model by taking this inner product of the interaction information and the standard inset, which I'll define in a minute, then penalizing it by the number of parameters. Okay, any questions about insets at that point? I realize it's a rather brief introduction.
I actually have a question about linear integer programming that you mentioned.
Yeah, I don't claim to be an expert on this.
It's not that linear. In integer linear programming, there are some solvers that I know that can do this, but there are some solvers who can go beyond this and go to nonlinear case of integer programming. Is that useful in any way for insets?
I have no idea.
The nonlinear case.
Yeah, I have no idea. So everything we do is all within a product, so it's all linear. But it's all, okay. You know, you want to test something like this. And then the other question is, you know, does it represent an independence, which we'll look at a bit later? And it's always this kind of formulation. So it is sort of by definition linear. So I've never considered using a nonlinear integer program.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Any other questions?
Okay, is there a reason why insets have to be defined for overlapping sets as opposed to non-overlapping sets?
It's like, no.
The mutual information is typically zero when nothing overlaps.
When you say overlap, are you talking about the fact that these sets don't have to be disjoint?
Yes.
So maybe A and B do have to be disjoint, actually, because otherwise I'm not sure it would work. Yeah, so maybe take it with a pinch of salt what I said there. But so certainly C doesn't have to be disjoint from A and B, and you can see it won't make any difference, right? It'd just be like you're conditioning on a slightly larger set than so basically A and B will just end up being smaller in practice, because when you take the union, you won't know what exactly went into it apart from the things that are disjoint from the conditioning set. So that's not an important distinction. Does that clear up? I think was that Ellie who asked?
Yes.
Okay. So then directed acyclic graph models, so say hopefully you're all at least somewhat familiar with them. So as Stefan said, one way of defining the model that's described by a directed acyclic graph is to use what we call the local Markov property, in fact, the local ordered Markov property. And for that, we pick some topological order. So that's an order where all the parents precede their children. And then we say that each variable has to be conditionally independent of its predecessors. Sorry. So that's just the things that came before it in the ordering, apart from its parents, conditional on its parents. And this set of conditional independence is a sort of minimal way of describing the model that this direct acyclic graph describes. And then, of course, we can use semigraphoids to deduce other independences and get back to things like the global Markov property. So correspondingly, we can kind of define this what we call the standard imset for a DAG as just a sum of all these semi-elementary imsets corresponding to the ordered local Markov property for each vertex for some topological ordering. And it turns out that then you can write this like this. So it's a relatively straightforward proof. And this has quite a few nice properties. So first of all, it's obviously structural. It's already written in this form here. So we know it's a structural imset. It's also the case that if you have a distribution, it's going to be Markov with respect to this graph, if and only if when you take this inner product between this standard imset and the interaction information operator vector, you get zero. In other words, it will be strictly positive. There are a couple of other nice properties. So it's not even clear from the way I describe this that what you get is invariant to the order that you choose for your graph, but actually you can see here it is. Another nice fact is that it doesn't actually matter which member of the Markov equivalence class you choose. So you can have reverse some edges, for example, and maybe get the same set of conditional independences. And in fact, this quantity is invariant to the which member of the Markov equivalence class you put in. So we have this result that two graphs are Markov equivalent if and only if they have the same standard inset. And it's also sparse. So you can see it only has at most two times the number of vertices plus one terms, but actually one of these will always be empty. One of these parent sets will be empty. So it will cancel out with this set here. And the pit that we're really interested in is this fact, right? So P is Markov with respect to this graph, if and only if this inner product is zero. And that's what we're going to use for our search method with mags a bit later on. So then there's another sort of characterization of directed acyclic graph models based on what is called a Möbius transformation. So we sort of take this standard imset that we've already defined, and we say, okay, we're going to take all the supersets for some given set A, add them all up, and then we do one minus, which doesn't have any particularly important effect. And what we find is that the variables in this, what was called the characteristic imset, the entries are one, if and only if there's some vertex V, which is contained in the set A, and such that it, together with all its parents, contains the whole set A. So slightly more concrete example, this graph here has a characteristic imset whose only zero entry is the 1, 2 set, and all the others are of this form for some vertex V. So one is contained within the set one and is contains the set one and contained within one and its parents. 2, 3 is contained within the set, contains the set three and is contained within 1, 2, 3, which is three and its parents. Okay. So that's the sort of basic idea of why imsets might be useful for use with graphical models. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about maximal ancestral graph models. And actually, formally, these are called directed maximal ancestral graph models, because as Stefan was saying, general maximum ancestral graph models have to allow for conditioning as well. But the undirected part is quite trivial to incorporate if we want to do it afterwards. So a directed MAG model is just a collection of independences that you can get from a directed acyclic graph model with hidden variables. So this is a very simple example, which hopefully looks pretty familiar to you because it's the Bell graph. And so we've got this hidden variable here, which I'm calling zero. In order to get the maximal ancestral graph, we're just going to turn this latent variable into a red bidirected edge. And the color is not important other than as a way of distinguishing which kind of edge is which. And this maximal ancestral graph, if you use the Markov property for it, you'll find that, so we can go back to the direct acyclic graph and you'll see that, for example, four is independent of one and two given zero and three. And then you can combine that with the independences you get for zero. And you will end up finding that you get these independences here. So for example, X1 is jointly independent of X3 and X4, and X3 is independent of X2 given X1. Another way of seeing this is to use what's called M separation, which is essentially the same as D separation. Okay, and then in a paper from 2.5 years ago now, we gave a criterion for two of these graphs to be Markov equivalent based on collections of subsets. And I'm not going to describe exactly what the subsets are, but a sort of analogy to DAGs is you think of just, so we've got these notions called heads and tails. And in DAGs, the heads are just the sets of vertices, individual vertices, and the tails are just the parent sets for each of those vertices. There is a formal definition in the appendix if you want to have a look. So here's an example of another MAG. This is sometimes called the inducing path, sorry, the discriminating path of length three. So this implies two conditional independences. So one can check that, for example, there are two paths between one and three. If we go by one, by two, then that two is a collider. So if we don't condition on two, then that path will be blocked. The other path has four as a collider. So again, if we don't condition on four, that path will be blocked. So we can read off that X3 and X1 should be marginally independent. And there's a similar argument to show that X1 should be independent of X4 given X2. And these are the heads and tails. You can see that in this case, the heads just correspond to the bidirected edges as well as the vertices. And if we compute the parameterizing sets, we get these here. And what's more interesting perhaps is the sets that are missing. So the sets that are missing are 1, 3, which corresponds to this marginal independence here, and 1, 4 and 1, 2, 4, which correspond to this conditional independence, 1 independent of 4 given 2. And we have a theorem which basically says this object is the same for two graphs if and only if they are Markov equivalent. And what's interesting from our perspective is that the characteristic inset takes it for the DAG takes exactly the same form as this parameterizing set. So if we apply it to a DAG, the heads, as I said, are just the vertices, and the tails are just subsets. So the tail is just the parents. So if we look at each vertex union with every subset of its parents, that is the same as this characteristic inset that we already defined for a DAG. So the idea here is, well, maybe if we sort of apply the parameterizing set as the characteristic inset for a MAG, and then compute what that implies the standard inset must be, that will define the model for a MAG. So we're going to define the characteristic inset for a MAG as being one if and only if that set is in the parameterizing set and it's zero otherwise. And then we'll work out what that implies about the standard inset. So you'll notice here I'm using this in quotes because at this point we don't know that it's going to do what we want, but we're going to define it as just the inverse transformation of the Möbius transformation we saw before. So we take one minus the characteristic inset, and then we have this alternating sum this time to get back to the standard inset. And it can be shown this is the same as this expression here. And Thankfully, this is exactly the same as what we would have for a DAG. So in the case of a DAG, the heads, remember, are just the vertices. And this sum is just going to be contain two elements, one with the vertex in and the other without. So here we'll get delta T, i.e. the parents, minus delta V union T. So it is consistent with what we had for DAGs. Okay, so now the question is, does it actually define the model that we care about? And the answer is, surprisingly, in some sense, it does most of the time. So there are sort of three cases on this standard inset. So first of all, it can be the case that it defines exactly the same model as the graph. And this seems to be the most common, at least for small graphs. And for very small graphs, it's extremely common. The second case is that it does define a model, but some of the independences that are implied by the graph are not implied by the inset. So there's a sort of, we have a result which shows that the only independencies which can appear must be ones that are implied by the graph, but it can be the case that not every independence implied by the graph does not appears. And then the third case, which is sort of surprising, it's not more common, is that where the inset just isn't actually structural, so it doesn't define any model at all. And as I say, fortunately, that seems to be quite unusual. So we ran this integer linear programming for a large number of graphs. So finding the equivalence classes was quite time consuming. But then, so for example, there are 285 connected equivalence classes for 5 variables. And all but one of them fall into this category 1. So they all define the same model as the graph when we use that standard inset. And there's only one case, which I'll show you in a second, where it defines a strict submodel of the independence relations that the graph describes. And there are no cases where it's not structural. Then for 6 variables, there are now 55 models which don't represent the same graph out of more than 13,000. So that's, again, pretty good. And there's only one where it's not structural. And again, I'll show you that in a second. And then even for 7 variables, we didn't manage to compute all of them because there's just too many different patterns between 14 and 17 edges. But we're getting over 1 million graphs, and only under 15,000 of them are define a strict subset of the independence restrictions. And only 8 of them are not structural. So what goes wrong in the n=5 case? Well, it's this model here, the bidirected 5 cycle. And sort of in some sense, there's a sort of cyclicity to the independences, which you just can't really resolve. So the inset will represent some of the independences. So if you have a conditional independence, so if I look, for example, 1 independent of 3 given 4, that will be represented by the inset. But another kind of independence is a marginal independence. So 1 marginally independent of 3, that's not represented by the inset. So you get all the conditional independences, and you can use them using, if you assume you have a graphoid as opposed to a semi-graphoid, to deduce the marginal independences. We kind of didn't really want to do that, right? We don't want to say that we're assuming that our model is a graphoid.
I have a question, Robin. Did you say that 4 cycle is fine, but 5 cycle is not? They're both sibling in some sense, and both involve marginal distribution. So what makes this one more annoying?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. So the problem is that if you sort of try and write out all the independences, so for a 4 cycle, you just have 1 independent of 3 and 2 independent of 4, and there's no what I would call overlap, right? There's a set of collection of sets that you associate with each of those two independences. In that case, just one set, so the set 2, 4 and the set 1, 3, and there's no intersection between those sets of sets. Whereas in this case, if you try and write out all the independences that are associated with this graph, you'll find you get, for example, 1 independent 3 given 4. So that will give you 1, 3 and 1, 3, 4. But you also need 1 independent 3 as a sort of separate independence. And the problem is that the conditional independences alone don't define, don't give you those marginal independences without extra assumptions. So it's this overlap that I, as I would call it, between the sets, which causes the problem. Okay. And it's even worse when you have the sixth cycle, so much so that you get a model which isn't even structural, let alone not defining all the independences. Does that make sense, Ilya?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, and then there are some other examples which are interesting. So this is an example where all the, so I defined what I termed a structural inset before. There is a sort of special case of a structural inset called a combinatorial inset, where you use the integer k equals one. And all the ones where the model is defined by this sum of all the ones which fall into this category one are combinatorial. And this is the sort of first example where the inset is not combinatorial, but it is structural. And then obviously it falls into category two, right? Because it's only a strict subset of the independence restrictions. And we sort of conjecture that all the ones where this works will be combinatorial. Okay, so how am I doing for time here? Okay, running out. So so one subset of graphs we found that it, for which this does work, are what we call simple mags, and they're ones where there's no head of size greater than two. So basically, if you have any three variables that are connected by bidirected edges, then one must be an ancestor of the other. So in this case, for example, three is a parent of five, and therefore three, four, five is not the head. And this is, you can see it's a richer class than DAGs. So we're getting what, twice as many here, three times as many here, five and a half times as many here. Although you can also see it's a significant subset of the number of total equivalence classes. But yeah, so we have this proposition which says that the standard inset does define the model implied by the graph if the mag is a simple one. So we're kind of interested in doing model search, and we have this scoring criterion that is used a lot for DAGs called the BIC, and we can use it for mags, but the problem is that you have to find the maximum likelihood estimates for the model, and for DAGs you can do that in closed form, but for mags it's computationally in general very expensive. So what we can do instead is to use this inner product that we saw before as a sort of substitute for the likelihood. And this is a very good approximation, it turns out, if the distribution is actually Markov with respect to the graph. So, and then we penalize it in the usual way one penalizes BIC. So as I say, it turns out that it's a very good approximation. And so this score is consistent over the set of mags. So we restrict to the class of simple mags because obviously we want it to actually define the right model. And we take a simulation from a paper by Tom Klaassen from UAI last year, where he was doing a similar thing, but using the actual BIC. And then we find in the great tradition of all machine learning papers that our method does a little bit better than theirs. So this red line shows our method, and the blue line shows theirs in terms of the skeleton accuracy. And then the edge mark accuracy, again, our method is doing better than theirs on this subset of graphs. So in summary, IMSETs can be used to define arbitrary conditional independence models, and they're particularly nice when you apply them to direct acyclic graphs. And some of these properties are replicated in maximum ancestral graphs, but unfortunately not all of them. So we've seen there are cases where you don't get a model at all. We think that the problem is that you can't describe the model without using these repeating sets in terms of the conditional independences. Describing which graphs don't give you a model which completely defines the graph, which describes all the conditional independences in the graph, is an open problem. And it seems like it may be combinatorially difficult. If you do have one that defines the model, then you can use it to give a consistent score, which is much more efficient than BIC. Thanks very much. And there's some
references. I have a question, I'm sorry. When you say describing the graph is combinatorially difficult, do you mean that the decision problem where I give you a graph and you answer a yes or no question about it, just you think it's combinatorially difficult?
Yes.
That's what you mean. Okay.
Got it. That's exactly what I mean.
Hi, Robin.
Sorry.
If you apply your score function to DAX, does it reduce to anything known in DAX?
Well, in that case, it's just so this is exactly equal in DAX. So it's just the BIC.
It's exactly the BIC.
Yeah.
Hi, Rob. This is Richard. I have a question. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, so you mentioned there could be a third case where the definition is not structural, but you also mentioned earlier when you motivated definition, you said it obviously is structural. So I'm wondering.
That was for DAGs, right? So it's not true for MAG that it's obviously structural. So this.
If you go to the next slide, if you go to the next one. Yeah, well.
So this is all for DAGs. And then for MAGs, it's only defined by this parameterizing set. So there's no reason it should be structural at all, right?
Right, but did you say something is obviously structural when you motivate a definition from the sets instead of before you're doing the Mobius inversion?
I hope I didn't say that because it's not true.
Oh, okay. I must have misunderstood. Okay, I understand. Thanks.
Yeah, so I mean, because it's sort of defined implicitly and like by analogy, there's no reason it should do anything sensible at all. It just turns out that it does, which is very pleasing.
Right, I see. Thanks.
Thanks.
So Robin, there is a question in Slack from Matthias. I can just read it to you if you'd like.
Okay.
He says, Robin, sorry, I missed the part in the score. Does your consistent score correspond to a particular consistent closed form of inefficient estimator of model parameters?
I'm not sure exactly what you mean there, Matthias. So it's what do you mean by an efficient estimator in this context or inefficient estimator?
I guess in the lead he means in the parametric case.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, so it's an approximation of the MLE, which is in general hard to evaluate quickly. So if you've got a huge number of models, then in principle, you'd have to find the MLE for every one of them separately. But the idea is because, so I guess I didn't really explain this very carefully, but because the entries in this inner product will be the same for all the different models. Once I've computed one of these guys, I don't have to do it again, even for another graph. And therefore, I have a potentially much more efficient way of evaluating this approximation of the log likelihood than I would get by if I had to evaluate it for each graph separately. Does that answer your question? Silence. Okay.
It's a sum. So maybe we could. I thought we made it a good live discussion about it later or something.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you.